620. This is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear an appeal by the state of Texas to preserve congressional and legislative districts. That's after a lower court struck down the districts as racially discriminatory. A lower court ruling found problems with two congressional districts and statehouse districts in four counties. Nina Perales is an attorney for one of the plaintiffs that has challenged the voting maps.
The argument that we've made to the court is that the folks who redrew admitted very openly that they used race when they drew the district, that they looked at people's race before they put them in or outside of the district. And it's our argument that that was unconstitutional because there was no good reason to look at voters' race.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says he's eager for a chance to present the state's case before the Supreme Court. Primary elections are scheduled for March under the existing challenged maps. The Supreme Court probably will hear arguments in April and decide the case by late June. At the end of last year, the Federal Communications Commission repealed net neutrality rules in place since 2015 that forced internet service providers to serve up all legal web content at the same speed. What will that mean for the way we use the web going forward? Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with Clint Finley of Wired Magazine about how companies might respond to the suspended regulations.
Were internet service providers losing money under net neutrality rules, or were they losing maybe potential revenue?
We'd be more on the side of potential revenue. The companies, they weren't, you know, hurting from these regulations, but they did want to try to make money by essentially charging a company like Netflix or Google, which owns YouTube, extra money to deliver all the video that they deliver to customers. And their argument is that people are watching more and more video, they're consuming more and more data, and they don't want to pay more for their internet connections. So they need to find new ways to make money, to make revenue, to put into infrastructure for supporting all this data.
And I've heard that argument that companies like, you know, YouTube and Netflix were almost getting a free ride before. Is that reasonable?
The thing there is that they are still paying for their connectivity. So maybe an analogy with a post office would help here. So if you want to mail a package to someone, you pay at the post office and then they just get the package. You know, they don't have to pay again. The paid prioritization idea is a little bit like that, but sort of in reverse. The consumer is already paying for their internet connection. And actually, the companies like Netflix are also paying for their connections. But the internet service providers would like to charge the Netflixes of the world essentially twice. Once to have the data leave their data centers and then once to have it arrive in your home, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So did internet service providers have to change the way they'd been doing business already after 2015? Or were the rules more like a preventive measure against the possibility that ISPs might start doing this double-dip postal system in their delivery of content?
It was more of a preventative measure, though there had been some examples of internet service providers blocking or slowing down content. The thing that triggered the Comcast lawsuit in 2008 happened when the FCC ordered Comcast to stop slowing down BitTorrent traffic. And there was also an instance around 2009 or 10 where AT&T was caught working out a deal with Apple to block Skype on iPhones. But it wasn't a widespread practice. There wasn't any big major change that anyone had to make in order to comply with the rules.
So right now, the big internet service providers, and I'm summarizing here, but they're saying, look, we didn't want this unnecessary regulation, but we're not intending to change anything, certainly from the perspective of consumers. They will get the internet as they always have if they continue paying for our service. Can we trust that this will be true for a long time?
Not really. And we've already seen them sort of backpedal a little bit, where ahead of the FCC vote, they were more explicit about saying we're not going to block or throttle or allow paid prioritization. And they've backpedaled on the paid prioritization part. Comcast actually removed that from a web page that had their sort of net neutrality pledge on it. They say they don't have any plans to engage in paid prioritization right now, but you know, they're not promising not to in the future at this point. You see that in a lot of these cases, that they're not willing to outright say that they're never going to do paid prioritization.
That was Clint Finley of Wired Magazine talking with KERA's Chris Boyd. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 9, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. The Stew Pot in downtown Dallas is best known for providing services to clients experiencing homelessness. For decades, the organization has also run a weekly club for kids whose families may be at risk for homelessness. Rafael Dominguez works with those kids. In this week's State of the Arts, KERA's Ann Bothwell talked with him about using art to navigate heavy topics.
Rafael Dominguez, welcome to KERA.
Thank you very much.
This program starts in the first grade and runs through high school. Who are the kids?
The kids are from the Dallas area. Most of the kids that attend the program are from south of 30, but from Hispanic descent. We have an average about 150 students total between the smaller kids all the way to the high school students.
What are they learning?
For the elementary school students, it's definitely an enrichment program to help them build their creativity and to also help them find an entertaining side towards learning. And as for the high school and middle school students, we'd really focus on preparing them for college.
These kids are all from families who are living at least 185% of the poverty,
correct,
national poverty level. Can you describe some of the challenges that they face?
One of them would be the not being able to see their parents as much because their parents do work. And since a lot of them work minimum wage jobs, some of them have two or three jobs at a time. So that's why we try to provide any advice for the students as well while they're through the program. And the same thing for the parents, you know, to make sure that there's an open line of communication between the parents and the students. I would say aside from that, it would also be the where they're located, the schools that they attend. That definitely has an effect on them as well. Since they're from a lower income base, obviously the schools that are around in those areas don't also always necessarily have the best funding. So I would say that that's one of the things that impacts the students as well.
Now, you teach there.
Yes.
But you are actually a graduate of the program.
Correct.
As well. How is it different from regular school for you?
I would say it's fun, but it's not in a bad way because the school was fun too, but I guess in a different way. They definitely brought a lot of creativity to the table, whether it be art projects, whether it be learning about history. They always brought creativity to the table, and I enjoyed it.
Why was this program so important to you when you were a kid? I mean, you started in first grade and you stuck with it all through high school.
It was like my second home. It definitely felt like I was always welcome there. I always knew that I always had a place to be at aside from home. I wouldn't say a place to stay necessarily, but it was definitely always, I felt that support.
The Stupop partnered up with the Museum of Street Culture to create a lesson plan for this upcoming exhibition called Picturing Homelessness. And it's going to be a series of shows. And the first one is going to be work that the elementary school kids in the program have done. Is homelessness too heavy of a topic for elementary school kids?
At first, I thought that it was. When we connected it with art, I think that's when it definitely brought a different perspective where we were able to have a little bit more of an open dialogue with the students.
The work is going to be displayed in the windows,
yes,
of the Stewpot. That's kind of an unusual venue for an,
yes,
art show.
Yes.
Why there?
You know, the students are doing what they can to create a voice for the people that are going through homelessness. They're doing that through their artwork. Yeah, they're doing that through displaying their artwork by when the students were drawing out their artwork, the more things that they focused on were the necessities. What do homeless people actually need? You know, what, aside from food, they also need love, they need care, they need some type of moral support. They're human beings like everyone else, that a person's a person regardless where they come from or the situation that they're going through. Sometimes it's a little tougher for certain people to get back on their feet, but that's why I love the Stewpot so much, because they focus on getting people back into society and helping them rebuild their lives.
Rafael Dominguez, thank you so much.
No, thank you very much for having me here.
Meet the kids and see their artwork at a reception for the Picturing Homelessness exhibition on January 27th. More details are at artandseek.org. In the weather, clear but cold tonight, lows in the low to mid-20s. Wind chills will dip into the teens in some spots. Sunny skies tomorrow with highs around 40 degrees. Tomorrow night, lows will dip into the 20s. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.